Code Spaces with Kendra Havens.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host. And make sure to check out www.azuredevops.show for the past episodes and show notes. And the goal of this podcast is to empower you and your teams with the information that you need to move fast, deliver consistent quality using the .NET ecosystem, and run your software systems with confidence in the full breadth of Azure. And for those of you running .NET and Azure-related user groups, I've been doing a lot of online video presentations remotely to your groups. And if you run one of those groups, I'd love to give a presentation for you. And our sponsor and my employer, ClearMeasure, is a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. And if we can help, please get in touch. And if you're a .NET developer and would like to become an architect and like a career path for that, we are hiring. So just apply on the website, clearmeasure.com, and several positions are open at the time of this recording. Kendra Havens is our guest today on the Azure DevOps podcast, and she's a program manager at Microsoft. Kendra is passionate about using technology to empower people and solve the world's problems, be it technological, business, or people puzzles. She loves a good challenge. And she's on the .NET and Visual Studio team and focuses on .NET tooling and the testing experience in Visual Studio. And you may recognize her from videos on Visual Studio, .NET Core, C-sharp, testing tools, as well as a speaker on the most recent .NET Conf. And excited to have her. Kendra, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you, Jeffrey, so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. And you're an expert among other things, code spaces. We're going to be talking about that today. But for people who missed the .NET Conf and haven't heard you speak before, what's your path been, you know, arriving at Microsoft and working on the technologies at your current part of Microsoft?
Oh, yeah. So I was brought into working on code spaces when they started thinking more about .NET integration. And so working on an app inside of a code space. And I guess just in case people haven't heard the buzz yet, code spaces are the idea of a fully managed dev environment that you can deploy. It's reproducible. It sets up everything in your dev environment for you. So it's almost like it's basically a remote desktop, but instead of connecting to it and streaming, you know, pixel by pixel, getting that lag, all of that, it actually streams JSON packets to your coding environment, to VS Code or Visual Studio. So it's kind of your... It's better than a remote desktop, and it's managed and redeployable, and it's kind of bakes in all of these little things that you'll need. So your packages, your setup is all automated, and it's all managed in your source control system too, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's an ongoing problem, not just in recent times with .NET, but just ever since the dawn of programming. I have a new computer and I want to get started with a code base, whether it's a new code base or an old code base. And there's so much setup that has to happen. Now the holy grail is that you go to a computer and it's there and you start working. How close are we really? And let's get into that. Is it 100% or where is it now?
Well, I don't want to say 100%. It definitely depends on your app types, what you're working on. So some things will be really easy to set up if your app is, for example, already containerized, already runs on Linux, you already have all of your dependencies declared in a Docker file. It'll be really easy to set up. It'll be really easy for you to use code spaces as well. So Codespace is the magic behind it. How it all happens with this setup is it's actually it started very Docker-based. So Docker files were the ultimate solution to runs on my machine kind of issues. So we could build and test and deploy in kind of predictable environments. The problem was we couldn't often develop inside of a container. This is what we're trying to do. So so Codespaces will take a Docker file. It wraps it with a devcontainer.json, which kind of declares everything outside of a Docker file that you might need to run. So it'll list out things like your VS Code extensions that you need installed. So everything VS Code would need to connect to. I guess your port forwarding would already be managed in Docker files. So things like, I think more authentication keys and that kind of thing, you can all manage there. And devcontainer.json is, I guess, the container version. So VS Code can work with that. And the next, so VS Code with Codespaces can work with that. Mm-hmm. The next level out, that if you want to work in something that, for example, you have an app that is not containerized, you have a lot of dependencies that can't be installed in a container, they have to be on an actual Windows machine, you can use a devinit.json that will wrap your devcontainer.json, which wraps a Docker file. So you know where your dependencies are all the way down. And that is what Visual Studio Code Spaces can use to set up your environment.
Okay, so there are two tracks here, one for VS Code and Linux only, and then another one for Visual Studio with Windows-based software. Am I hearing that right?
Yep, exactly right.
Okay. So does it matter if the software is targeting the full operating system on the Windows side, or if the developer doesn't care and is just throwing it to Azure App Service? What is there a difference there?
That's actually funny. I should actually probably give a precursor that this is all still in development. DevInit is not fully developed. DevContainer.json is a little further along. I do want DevInit to be able to declare the particular Windows operating system that you need to be running on in order to get set up, because I do think down the road, we will kick ourselves in 2 or 3 years if we needed to declare the actual OS dependency, you know, just like a Docker file does in the very first line. What from image are you working with? I do think we need that. I don't think we have anything set up currently in the file to do that, though. So I think it actually just assumes you're 17.09 or later on latest Windows 10 to deploy.
Which, if people are targeting Azure, then that most certainly would be the case.
Yeah.
If they're not using VMs.
Yeah, likely.
So it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, the best experience right now with what's still being in development, the best experience is for .NET 5 container destined applications.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I actually think .NET Core 3.1 is what a lot of our samples are still in, because devcontainer.json has been around, I think, I want to say a year or so. So we still have a bunch of very healthy samples. That's 3.1, and .NET 3.1 is our LTS release and stuff. So we might keep a lot of those around for quite a long time. If you do want to run a .NET 5 app, you need to... actually, I was doing this morning. I just need to grab the .NET 5 Docker image, and works fine. It'll spin up okay.
Okay, awesome. Now, there's just tons of dependencies that applications can have. Which ones have you seen being the most common that are well supported?
Yeah, so a lot of things that we bring up when we were kind of talking to customers about this are things like SQL Server, IIS, RabbitMQ, Docker, everything that you'd actually need to install directly on a dev box. DevInit can do all of that for you. So even things that aren't traditionally installed with a Docker file, you should be able to do with DevInit. Should be. Okay. That's the goal. It's the Docker file equivalent, but for a VM, kind of. That's what we're going for. Be very, very powerful, but it's still in development. So don't... I know a lot of DevOps people especially would want to I don't know, jump on it and celebrate. And I guess it's a Microsoft Plus solution. Everyone change. Not ready for that yet. Still definitely in preview.
Right. But I imagine if something can be set up with a command line, then it probably works well at this point. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, and I should probably call out as well, the DevInit.json file is mostly just a wrapper for tools that you already have and run commands that you had already suspect. So if you're really happy with build scripts that you already have running, you can absolutely just drop a reference. It'd be like a run step in your DevInit.json, but you can absolutely drop that in there and use the same old build scripts that you've used in the past.
Yeah, so many .NET business applications, even if they're using some of the new storage solutions in Azure or elsewhere, still have a relational database and probably will for a long time to come. I was playing around with the SQL Server Linux container and was just amazed at how smoothly it installed and got set up and how quickly I could get to a point where I'm running queries against it and opening it up with SQL Server Management Studio. And so have y'all done testing with that, or is it just implicitly supported because it's all command line now?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. For a while, the very first code spaces all had SQL Server installed by default that were Windows and .NET focused. I think we probably took that out. We were calling it the kitchen sink image. I think we took that out, so you need to actually declare it. But yeah, so we definitely expect that to be pretty high usage. So that was the main scenario that we focused on.
Okay. There's always been two sides to the Azure and containers and environments. And it was the one side of where is your software going to run? And then it was the other side as to where are the developers going to write the code? And so tell us about the vision for this. Is this intended to have developers move to developing inside a container development environment, or is that just an option? What are the conversations inside Microsoft going?
Yeah, I think it's more about we want to provide the option to do so. So to develop in a cloud environment if you need to, because a lot of customers have underpowered dev machines or they don't like managing a ton of VMs that are custom set up. And there's tons of, you know, management software out there for, you know, on-prem VMs and managing and redeploying and updating the whole thing when, you know, a version changes and getting version mismatches and losing things after 6 months because they went into maintenance mode and nobody was paying attention. So that's the kind of thing that we want to avoid by kind of creating a declarative structure behind your dependencies and everything you need. And that's, you know, much more reliable than I guess what you have today. That's the goal. So as far as where the code is running and if your dev environment is inside of a Docker container or what's happening on your local machine, that has been a very, very interesting discussion point. Because with CodeSpaces, I mentioned that it's streaming JSON down to Visual Studio or Visual Studio Code as sort of like a view onto your VM, onto your cloud. I think we're calling them cloud environments, but they're secretly VMs behind the scenes, or special VMs, I guess.
Sure.
Maybe we'll change them enough that they won't quite be called VMs anymore. I don't know. We've done a lot of customer development, and I think a lot of people are still kind of uncertain where things are happening. So your build and your testing in a code space, even your source code, all of that is happening on Azure, and it's just streaming down sort of the UI on your local machine. But it gets a little confusing because your local Visual Studio would still require you to install some basic workloads. So I think a few things like just having the responsive UI and stuff on your local machine. Some stuff is still happening on your local dev box, But we did a bunch of work to kind of split out any processes we can move out of proc so they could happen on a completely different machine, completely different processor. We put a lot of work into it. So it's hopefully offloading work from your local machine. So you don't have to have a mega desktop to open your solution that your company's been working on for 10 years with, you know, hundreds and thousands of projects in it. So that's kind of what we're working towards. And we want it to be, predictable. So.
And you made a good point with developers who are working on underpowered machines. So is Microsoft planning on hosting it all, or are there going to be private capacity that's available if you want to equip your organization with a certain amount of horsepower to connect to?
Yeah, I think that's been a question we haven't quite answered yet. So initially, back in when devcontainer.json first came out, it was remote extensions for Visual Studio. And I think it did have a private on-prem sort of offering, so you could host your own containers. We don't have a version available for doing that with DevInit, so you could kind of host your own DevInit VMs with Visual Studio if you didn't want to use VS Code. And so right now, I think there are, quote unquote, golden path is for it to be hosted in Azure, so we can kind of make sure the VMs can access all of the resources that they need when they go to be provisioned. Because we'd control, you know, what Microsoft sites they could go and download a lot of those things and you know, how to get that old version of, Windows 10 or a NuGet package or something like that. So I think we did plan to manage quite a lot because we wanted to ensure that it would be stable. When you went back to it in 6 months, we don't want you to have a problem just connecting in general. That would be worst case scenario, right? I guess. So being able to host all of that yourself, kind of, I think we were worried it might negate some of the benefits that people thought they were getting. It's a work in progress for sure.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery.
Yeah, there's one of the longstanding requests for people using Azure pipelines. They'll run the build locally, and maybe it takes 2 minutes for a smaller application, and then they'll run it in the hosted build agents, and it'll take 5 minutes. And they're thinking, man, where's the configuration key where I can just pay a little bit more and specify to run my pipelines on a beefier machine?
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I've definitely heard that feedback. Unfortunate.
I bet you some of your own teams would love that feature.
Oh, for sure. I don't know how customizable, especially the service aspect of it. I work a lot more in making sure the .NET tools light up inside of it. You get colorization and diagnostics and all that. We had to divide a lot of Roslyn into a language service protocol that VS Code kind of put forth to do a lot of that. But for servicing, I'm not sure how much configuration will be available. But one thing CodeSpaces will offer is, I think right now we have basic, standard, and what's the third one? I want to say like ultimate or something like that, but there's a third tier, and that is being able to configure how much horsepower your code space gets. That does decide, how many gigs of RAM you get. And I think I'm trying to remember what else was in the dropdown. I've seen so many versions, it gets hard to recall, but you can definitely configure how many cores you get.
Okay. Now I can see some remote pair programming workflows being made simpler with this.
Yeah. And I think one of the big benefits as well is like, if you just need to work on a project temporarily or you're reviewing code or something, you can connect without needing to install all of those dependencies on your machine and then clean them up afterward. So for people, especially like contractors, having kind of instant setup, just connecting to something that's already provisioned and reliable and everything, could have some pretty major benefits.
So what clients are you intending to support? I mean, are we talking where you could, my kids could have their Amazon Kindle Fire tablet, go to a URL, and now they're coding in a professional code base?
Actually, yeah. I think during it was GitHub, the GitHub Universe keynote last week actually showed, I'm trying to remember who it was. It was one of the GitHub people connecting from his iPad with a URL. So just in the browser, and it was basically opening VS Code so he could keep working. Yeah, which is pretty cool. So it's, VS Code in the browser, which is very cool. We have a few options. There's VS Code in the browser, which, opens, a completely kind of hosted thing inside of your browser. And then there's, you can also connect with like regular VS Code that's installed on your desktop, and you can connect with Visual Studio.
Okay.
A couple
so
different options.
Launching from a URL can pull up VS Code, but launching from a URL is not going to support streaming over the full Visual Studio UI. Imagine that.
No.
Now we're talking about remote desktop and just painting the screen again.
Yeah, that'd probably be more efficient at that point. I'm not sure. Right. We have gotten requests for it though, so. We'll see. Yeah. We'll focus on the other three products we have for a while and see what the demand is, I'm sure.
Well, VS Code is just getting more and more powerful all the time. I'm wondering when a WebAssembly version of it is going to come out, and then all the extensions just streamline behind that.
Wow.
But we'll see what happens. But they keep on getting better.
Yeah, I'm ridiculously excited about it. I'm really excited about GitHub Actions too. I don't think we've ever had something that's quite DevOps as code, but like also open source and also fully collaborative. It's just, I'm super, super excited about what that org is doing, I guess.
Well, do you know anything new there? We had Chris Patterson on the show a while back talking about it, but I know they're constantly moving forward.
Yeah, I saw that episode. I basically know what I got to demo at .NET Conf. But I love keeping an eye on the GitHub Actions marketplace because so many people are coming out with these actions that are so good. Like, so my team, I mentioned, work on the test experience in Visual Studio. And I also actually work on the test platform. So anywhere a .NET test kind of happens, I work directly with the teams involved. So .NET test is definitely used inside of GitHub Actions. And I was kind of like, is that a good experience? How much work do we need to do? Do they get UI? Can people hook it up to have it trigger on PRs and get feedback from their tests? Like, is it fully customizable? Do we need to change anything in the platform? And oh my gosh, of course it's viewable. There's displays, there's actions, and all of this was created by people not in my team. They might not have even been .NET developers, but they can read a test results file that we generate, or like any one of them, and I don't know. It just integrates like that, and I've honestly never seen that. I don't know. I get it. It's cool when technology stacks start interacting in ways that you hadn't imagined yet. It's very, very cool.
Right. Right. Well, what is the latest in testing in Visual Studio? Are there some new things coming about that we just haven't heard about yet?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of subtle things that have come out. So one thing that I think was probably our biggest crowd pleaser, it's a particular crowd, but they were quite pleased, was dynamic playlists. So you can now, so playlists have always been defined in XML. And before, they used to be a static list that listed every single fully qualified name of every test that you had selected to include. Now, you can, the XML is actually dynamic, and you can just define a single class or a single trait or a namespace. And any tests that have that are going to be included in the playlist. So even as you add new tests, if they fit those criteria, they will be added to the playlist.
Okay.
So that never has happened before. You'd had to, like, once you add a test, you'd have to remember to go back and say, like, oh, this was an integration test. I should go back and add it. Not the best system. Yeah, okay. So now we have that. It also has, you know, just a ton of new UI. Playlists can open in their own separate window in Visual Studio. So apart from the Test Explorer, when you're doing targeted development, that was at the top of people's lists. The test detail summary pane is a fixed width font. Celebrate. that was a huge, huge ask that we were happy to be able to get in. There's quite a few more things we should change to fixed width font, but we're getting there. It's on the backlog.
It always is.
Yeah.
Now, how do you keep up with all the new framework changes? I mean, with Blazor and with WinForms and WPF coming into .NET 5, I mean, just testing regular C# code, that's one thing, but in all the different ways that the user interface can run, what's the strategy there?
Testing the new frameworks?
Yeah.
Yeah. So luckily I have really smart people to lean on when it comes to testing, especially new web UI. There is sort of changing frameworks that luckily other people are working on. It's, I don't have an infinite surface area. One of them is sort of Playwright. I'm not sure. Yeah, it's you've heard of it. So I'll go into it a little bit. Playwright. Sort of like Shakespeare playwright, write plays, right. That kind of thing.
We'll include that in the show notes.
So this is a new UI testing framework for specifically web tests. And it's kind of the next iteration of Selenium. I'm trying to think, the lead developer, thought he was kind of low-key famous in our world. I don't know. I'm trying to remember what he worked on. They're building it, and they kind of pointed out how Selenium isn't built to test services. And there were a lot of other just kind of fundamental limitations, I think. And this is sort of our attempt to change that. So Playwright was, I think it did go 1.0 not too long ago. So I've been kind of definitely watching that, definitely talking with Arjun is the lead PM on that. I think he has a few videos out there and interviews and stuff where he's demoed a little bit of it. I know he was at the AppleTools conference. Showing off Playwright and what it could do. Definitely a lot of changes happening in the area, but migrating, you know, Selenium kind of won hands down for quite a long time, but it's been quite a long time. So it's good to kind of look at what's new and what might be some good solutions, especially as different, you know, microservices takes over the world. And you have to think about new kind of issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, even desktop apps now are smaller microservices that are just connecting over the wire to other smaller things that are running. So the web, all the web protocols they've gotten into everything.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm a little isolated. So the test platform mostly focuses on like MS Test, XUnit, and InUnit. So backend kind of code, business logic, code testing, just unit tests, you know.
Right.
The purest form. Yeah.
Sure.
Of unit tests. So, keeping an eye on how things are changing outside of that realm is definitely something that's interesting.
Awesome. I found the Playwright test URL, by the way, in GitHub. We'll include that in the show notes.
Thanks.
And I did see Arjun. He's program manager. He's tagged in that repository. So a lot of good stuff going.
Definitely.
And we always try to include as many relevant links in the show notes as we can. So
we'll put in whatever.
All right. Well, as we kind of wrap up, is there anything that, that your team is working on that we hadn't mentioned that just people need to know about?
I always love the productivity, code fixes and refactorings. Every single release, we're checking in an absolute ton of cool stuff that easier using of all new like C# features, better tooling, things that kind of lead you into better coding practices. I think the .NET 5 analyzers I'm most excited about. So those are just code quality analyzers that we haven't been able to ship before. We knew about them for years. Things like you shouldn't rethrow exceptions. You should just throw if you catch a certain exception variable. And if you actually write throw that variable, that can actually erase stack details. What you would just want to do is throw semicolon. That's it, right? We've known about that for such a long time, but we haven't been able to show a warning when people are doing that because tens of thousands of users have warnings set as errors. And we can't just go around checking in source breaking changes. We can't just cause errors, you know, in code as people are trying to migrate. They usually have enough to think about. So with the .NET 5 analyzers, we now have an analysis level that people can set and adjust for how many quality fixes they want to see in their code. And so they can kind of turn it up or turn it down as they need. So that's really cool. It's kind of like we finally got them off our chest. It's a relief that we can finally provide tooling where we needed to provide tooling. So we're really happy about that. There's about a dozen of them so far, and there will be more in the next .NET releases. So pretty cool.
I think everybody should put those code quality analyzers in their DevOps environment. It's only going to find problems.
Absolutely.
It literally can't harm. It can only help.
Yeah. It'll catch all kinds of things that we would have loved. Like, we should have put them in, you know, if we had known everything. Hindsight 2020, we would have put them in the very initial releases of all kinds of things. But it's good to get them out now.
Oh yeah. That was part of guidance in for .NET 1.0 developers.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
Well, Kendra, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing with us Code Spaces and what's been going on with the testing areas in Microsoft. It's a lot of material to cover, lots of stuff, and just tons of stuff that came out at the .NET Conf for developers to catch up on. So we'll include everything we talked about in the show notes. But are there any resources that we did not touch on that people need to hear about before we close?
I don't think so. That's quite a lot to look into. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. You're welcome. I appreciate you coming on the show. And for you listeners out there, till next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.